I wanted to have things that like we worry about in our daily lives, you know, like, cause like I worry about my friends, you know, like that sort of shit, like what's going on with their lives and like losing touch and whatever. And that's sort of how Frank came about. And like, it takes a while to get there, but what I wanted it to eventually be was the tension to come from, like the main character, like being threatened with losing his friend. And so you have Frank as a droppable item who becomes his, I don't know if you'd say best friend, because it's kind of, you know,
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that hounds a single author for over a year to come join his podcast. With me today is Kyle Kirin. Hi, Kyle. Thanks for making it.
Happy to be here.
blink if someone forced you to be here.
You've got someone just like lingering in the background.
Yeah. No. If you don't know him, Kyle Kirin is the author of Shadeslinger, all the Ripple System, one of the last surviving VR MMORPG series, and that's actually doing really, really well, mostly because, well, it's got stellar characters and a really gripping story and emotional moments and also cool numbers going up. Perfect storm. So, hi, Kyle. How are you doing?
Good. Happy to be here. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I think I've asked it before, but I'm still, like, riding those fumes of, like, I finally got him. He can't escape for 2 hours. Okay, tell me about Shadeslinger. Tell me about Ripple System. Why and how did you write that book?
I got introduced by it to Lit RPG in like 2018 at like a conference, like weirdly enough, and then I went through and just like read everything that I could. So, you know, it was like The Land, Awaken, Ascend, all that sort of stuff, and like VR was really popular back then. I mean, it was like maybe sort of like declining a little bit, but I think I actually wrote Shadeslinger in like 2018. I started the process, so and then actually I read Reincarnation of the Strongest Sword God, I think, and like I really liked the like VR and like the loot and all that. Yeah, and then I just figured I would try it, and that was basically it, honestly. Although I will say that like the book that I turned in originally was not reminiscent of what it currently is, like at all. It was like 120,000 words turned into Portal. Like the ripples didn't exist. The book ended like halfway through. I don't think House was like even really a major character in it at that point. Like I don't know if like, it's crazy to think back. Honestly, but I really just love the idea of VR. I like the reincarnator type stuff, and I wanted to do something that sort of had that sort of feel of like foreknowledge to it, but without it being a true reincarnation. So that's kind of like where Frank came from. If that makes sense, was like adding a little bit of knowledge, but not so much that like you always know that the main character is going to get bailed out because they know what's coming. Obviously, you always get the butterfly effect at a certain point, but yeah, that's kind of how I bumped into it. It's crazy to think back and like how you mentioned, like how much the genre has shifted with VR. Like I feel like I kind of got in right at that like initial decline of when Isekai and Scissor Apocalypse like really just like took off like a rocket and kind of eclipsed it.
Yeah, it's really weird. Because like recently we've seen a little bit of a shift where it's going more towards a little bit like standard fantasy with like numbers, right? So it's going even away from the isekai part. System Apocalypse is still doing super well as the point of this recording. So if you listen to this in 2028 and I'm sounding like a boomer, then that's why. Also, if in 2028 people still use the word boomer, then I just labeled myself. So, but... It's super interesting, like the way you kind of describe everything coming together, and I would actually love to hear more about it because I'm a notorious editor to the point that my people, like my friends, make jokes about it and are staging interventions. So
yeah, I've totally been there. I mean, I know Shadeslinger went through, I probably had in edits for a year and a half, something like that. Like, especially from like the first draft, and then like talking to Brooke, like my editor Portal, and changing things. And yeah, that one in particular, like it took a very, very long time to go through and sort of pick things apart.
Yeah. Talking to Brooke, he mentioned that book one kind of ended where he got the pistols, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much
and then
where it was.
Yeah, and then the whole like rivalry aspect of it. Did you come up with this together, or was it always in there?
The rivalry, like with the with like the renown system, or
yeah, with the renown system, and basically the don't shoot me, please, but I forgot the streamer guy's name.
Oh,
Kieran? The guy who is, yeah,
Man, I can't even. I feel like that was. It sort of ends with him kind of like being foreshadowed as the next like big threat, I think. The renown system, I definitely spent a long time talking to Brooke about that. The ripple system as a whole too, was something we came up with as like a way to just like signify that change is occurring, you know, like in the world. Like you have that sort of like, one of the things I really liked about VR is the way you can like show that things are happening in the world without actually being there. Like you don't need to cut like a random character. You just have a one paragraph line that says they're doing this cool thing. And then you can just go on with your day. So like that's really fun. So that's kind of where that came from. Tyrion sort of like, I really didn't have like a ton planned for him. Like at the time I was just kind of like, where do I go? Like I had no idea like what was going to happen in book two. I had like sort of like some ideas of like things that were like planted and like might be interesting at some point, but when I finished book one, I was really thinking this was a trilogy. Like that's what I was telling everyone, was like, yeah, three books, like, and then I'm out. And then like I finished book two and I was like, oh shit, like I'm nowhere close. He's like level 17 or some shit, like that's not gonna happen. Like I was I was way off. Yeah, definitely a massive revision process. It's been like a lot smoother since then. I feel like once you get that first thing done and it's concrete, it's settled, you know, it's a lot easier. It's also like more difficult because you're limited by like what you did previously, and I'm constantly shooting myself in the foot for like decisions I made in the past. It's little things like the item level that I have, you know, that I still track, and like no one cares, you know. Like there's like some stats that are like really fun, like cool, and like pieces of gear, and then there's stuff like that where like I just thought it'd be fun to have like, you know, raids gated by item level, sort of like World of Warcraft does with the looking for group, or they used to anyway. But in practice it's like now I'm just doing addition like all the time, you know. I'm just like combing through like the dock and being like just adding up, you know, 120 plus 136, and it's like, it's not, no one's ever been like, wow, I love how item level goes up over time, you know. Like
actually
plenty of cool stuff and all that, but that is not one of them.
I can help you out here. I actually really appreciated the amount of like work that went into the whole like numbers thing. I really do. Like it makes everything feel more, a bit more cohesive. So there you go. But
the first one, like it, like everything was just mathed out.
I talked to Travis, right?
What's that?
Yeah, we're having a bit of lag, so it's always interesting. Yeah. So if people are like, why is he talking over each other? Like, what's going on? Like, it's because Kyle is in the woods somewhere, and I am in Berlin, which is not close to that. So yeah, it's a bit of like the whole like satellite telephone thing. So I think what we should be doing, like, between every sentence, like like this, 10-4 like on TV, over. yeah, just like put your finger to your head and just nod. I talked to Travis, right? Travis Baldry, about Ripple System, and he had like this tongue-in-cheek grin when he talked about like, yeah, obviously, like none of these VR MMORPGs have ever like been written by a real game designer, because most of these things wouldn't really work out in a game, which is completely true. Mm-hmm. And I love him for it, okay. Because in a real game, you could never get this like cool power rush that you would get in like something like the Ripple System.
Yep. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But I still enjoy the fact that you have. Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason that like VR has kind of like fallen off a little bit, is that there's always tension with that. Like if you were to really create like a true game and like really stick with the rules, like it'd be completely impossible to have the sort of power fantasy sort of thing that is, you know, a large part of the genre anymore. Because there's just, you know, like enforced parity, right? Like that's like the point of a game is everybody gets to level, like, you know, say it's level 60 in World of Warcraft and everyone gets the same gear and you know, have different like levels, but you're never 3 times stronger than the next person. You know, you might be 5% stronger and like that's a lot when you go into an arena or something. But it just doesn't really work the same way. But it is fun to kind of like pick the fun elements of game design and get to play with them, and sort of like creating zones is one of my favorite things, because I always thought it was so cool in like, you know, WoW or something, and you're wandering and you go from like Zangar Marsh or something into like Hellfire and everything just radically changes. And you don't need to worry about like any of that fantasy type stuff, like, you know, the economics of it, the whatever, because it ultimately it's a game, you can do what you want.
For me, I sometimes caught myself with a thought of like having to smirk, because I thought like, hey man, I would love to be the protagonist in this story, but I would hate to play that game as someone else.
Someone else was like
you're playing and you're trying to do something, and like some nerd with like a fortune is like collecting all the cash and like everything in front of you, and the entire economy completely crashes because he's doing something, and you're like, no, I want to buy that item, right?
That's totally true.
But yeah, fortunately, we're not like it. you can write a spin off of that. Like, I don't think it would do well, but be like,
I don't know. Yeah, funnily enough, like one of the major things that we edited out, and at Brooks' insistence, which he was absolutely correct about, was the story. Actually, like, I wouldn't classify it as being pay to win, but like in the previous incarnation, but it was much more of that. It was based on I don't know if you ever played the game Arkage. They had it was a weird one. It was really fun in the early days, and then it went full pay to win, and like it basically collapsed, and they keep trying to bring it back and it keeps dying. But they had a system called like labor points, and whenever you did anything, you needed labor points. Like if you wanted to open an item box, if you wanted to chop a tree, if you wanted to basically you could kill stuff, but anything else required this currency, and you could buy it with money. And if you didn't do that, then you only got, you know, X amount. So what ended up happening is you had certain players who would spend, you know, hundreds of dollars, and they would just get to play the game forever. Right. And then the rest of us would, you know, get to do 30 minutes of the cool stuff, and then you could grind for a while. And it was interesting, like having played that and coming to this and being like, you know, how do I borrow some aspect of it without making it seem absolutely terrible? And the answer to that was cut most of that stuff out. Because it's just not fun.
Oh god, yeah. I can not even imagine trying to balance that. Like even just a narrative. So I'm gonna give you this one for free. And this is a question I've had for basically like since this podcast started. Maybe it's in book 5, maybe not. But I've really been wondering why Frank hasn't brought up the nipple system yet.
Yeah, there is a line in, I don't know if it's book 2 or 3, where Klein pops in and I think Frank, it might be Ned, asks him like, is something wrong with the nipple system? And then when Travis was actually recording it, he actually stopped and he was like, I just want to make sure, like, this is a joke, right? It's not a typo, like, you're not asking. This is not like a Freudian slip sort of thing. It was one of the few times I've made him laugh like during the recording, and it's like it's really hard to get him like to like, react to anything when he's going. He is locked in. That was a funny one to clarify that. Yes, nipple was intentional.
a man of singular focus and intent, clearly.
Yeah, it's amazing. I know, watching him work. It is absolutely incredible.
Yeah. He knows what he wants. I really appreciate that. Like, having him on a podcast was very, like, it wasn't intimidating per se. But yeah, he really will tell you, like, no, this is what I think about. This is the thing, what I think about that. He's really, really resting in himself, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. Like, not many people have that. And I've met a lot of people. So I like that. It was fun. And he brings that to basically everything he narrates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is incredible.
He's so talented too. Like, it's so cool. Yeah. Like, at this point in time, I have his voices so firmly in my head from the audio that, like, it's such a gift, honestly, to just, like, it's so easy to write, like, Frank's dialogue, like, knowing exactly what he sounds like. And, like, I don't remember, like, how I did book one, like, without that, like, in my head. Because now I'm down, like, I'm in the office just, like, shouting in my bad imitation of Travis's Frank, like, all the time. You know, and, like, I'm sure, like, I'm neighbors, like, walking by, and I'm just, you know, screaming about shafts and shit. it's hard to think about, like, what it would even feel like without him being there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, so, I don't know. It feels like character development, like, in and of itself, just to have an actual voice.
Yeah, totally. Like, I've been doing some narration stuff with my own project right now, and having someone narrate is definitely a trip. Like, whether they fit or not, like, just having voices for the characters, especially the ones that you didn't already imagine in your head, because I do that, really helps, because it also helps you edit. Because some of the stuff that you, like, wrote makes sense in your head, even if you read it out, but then someone else reads it out, you're like, no.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's amazing the things you catch.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, I got 5 Frank points, so I'm good for the rest of my life. I'm good. That being said, speaking of improvement, what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
I don't know. That's a hard question, honestly. I mean, people always just say to read, you know, obviously I do that, but, like, more something like more specific. I like this, like, one piece of advice that, like, Sanderson gave, like, in his online lectures, and he was talking about tension. And he was doing a chapter where two characters are, like, just basically having a conversation. And so he went through and edited it, and he said he didn't think it had enough. And so what he ended up doing was setting it in a cafe that had, like, a theme, like, in the world where a storm is rolling in and you can, like, watch it approach. And so it becomes these two characters, like, watching this, like, devastating storm roll in and having their conversation. And you're wondering who's going to be, you know, brave enough to stay out longer. And that was a really cool thought. Like, I think about that a lot just in terms of multitasking. It's like, if I have to have a conversation to just establish something, it's fun to have it be like, okay, well, they're going to do this. They're also going to be driving through this zone. They're also going to be evading this thing. And just trying to, like, keep things, like, really fast paced. What I really appreciated about that was, like, not only was it tension, but it was also, like, world building at the exact same time, which was really cool. I think that sort of, like, multitasking thing was the single, like, most interesting thing. I guess it also ties into, like, the Wheel of Time stuff with, like, the glass of water. I don't know if you've read that, but there's a scene where Avienda, I might be getting the name wrong because I read rather than listen for that one. But there's, like, a glass, she's from, like, a desert area, and there's a glass of water sitting on the table, and everyone is just, you know, completely ignoring it. And she's sitting there, like, inwardly panicking, wondering if someone's going to steal it because it's, like, such a precious thing. Like, that kind of world building I just find really interesting. Like, that kind of, like, elegant little, like, one detail that sort of tells you where a person's head's at and how different it is from everyone else, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally. Like, I love these kind of things too. Yeah, like, describing what's happening out of several different perspectives is so much fun. Like, I think it's basically a part of every single creative writing exercise, like, lecture ever, right? Where the people tell you, like, hey, describe one scene from, like, 3 different viewpoints. And make sure that each character is, like, has their own distinctive voice. It's hard, but it's also really fun. and it really allows you to get to know your characters better. I'm wondering who did that. Yeah, I think it was Sanderson who described the same, like, who did that in one of his books, and what worked really well. But I also kind of forget.
Yeah, I can't think of which one it would have been. Maybe like the Oathbringer ones with just like the enormous cast and all that, which I noticed you had behind you to your left.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I like these books a lot. I'm gonna read the next one too, but like they're getting a bit longish, you know.
So I think I dropped off after the second. I still love them, but they were taking so long to come out that I couldn't remember everything that was in them, and I couldn't reread. So I'm just gonna wait, and then eventually I'll have a 700 hour binge of audio when it finishes. They're fantastic. Yeah, they're definitely Michael there's Kramer. Some chonkers for sure.
Yeah, just going. Yeah, totally. No, like the
it's just my mom texting me. She's the only one, so
okay. Well, if it were my mom, it'd be like bling 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 bling. because like also one of my girlfriends, she has like this like tendency to hit enter after every single message. So whenever she texts me, I'm like, oh yeah, it's that girl, because like
you can tell right away just by the frequency.
Yep. Totally. You were saying though, like mixing the action with the dialogue. I think that sometimes that's like hard to do. And I think some people even overdo it, right? When
it's
you
easy for sure.
Yeah. Like finding a good balance there is like super, super hard, because sometimes like if you're doing a sword fight, you don't want to do exposition.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I always come up with is like when I'm writing, I tend to give like an exact time frame of how long something has been, which is something I've learned to just like not do, basically. Mm-hmm. But it'll be like 2 minutes later, and like they're having a sword fight, and it's like, wow, it's actually like pretty long, for two people to be like slapping each other with like 15 pound swords like in silence. But it's difficult. One of the things I struggle with is like, I guess it's easier in VR to have like a big bad guy have a monologue, because if you're playing a game, the bad guy is not targetable during his monologue, because the developers want you to listen to it. But I think I got some criticism for that, like fairly in like the first book, because people were like, why don't you just attack him? Why don't you just go for it? And like ever since then, I've been like, I usually have someone try. They're like, oh yeah, no, I can't. There's an invisible wall here. We have to listen to this, because otherwise, it's always like the bad guy is explaining his evil plan, or he's doing something. He's killing someone, and why did they interrupt, and all that sort of stuff. So there's always a weird balance with trying to make sure the dialogue doesn't interfere with the action.
Yeah, and I mean, on top of that, what's really cool is that you have this moment of like, okay, now we can go. Now we can attack him. Right. This always like whenever if you've ever played any MMO, like you know how the moment feels like, right? Mm-hmm. It's like let's go, let's start a fight. I also really appreciate that spoilers. I think in book 3 you had them wipe like a lot. That was cool, because like that also like never happens in many other MMORPG books. So
and like if you've played and you push content, like you die way more than die in these books, right? Like
totally.
Like I mean, you'll
What time it is? That's right, it's a new ad, and this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero. It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian Trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
We'll like smash your face against in a single encounter like 15 times, and then quit, and then come back the next day, and like maybe you get a little farther, and then like that's like reading in a nutshell. And you go to like replicate that in the book, and it's like, oh, as it turns out, that's not super fun to read, to be like, oh, we got them to 80%, and then we got them to 79%, and then, you know, we hit the first in range timer or like whatever. It's but definitely like, that's always like a weird balance to strike.
Yeah, like the way you balance that though, and I think you can even abstract this with like this incremental progress, which stretches on for hours. You shorten it pretty well together, and then at the same time you give them a clock at the behind it, right? Because it was other guild and they could, you know, get world first on it, it would be terrible. And it's something I actually want to talk to you about too. Like this really worked out, like the whole like timing wise, really good idea. I really like that because like there's always a tension there. And I think one of the biggest things that people like dislike about VR and MMORPG books is the idea that, how should I put it, like there's no real stakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, for sure. You can just always log out. And there's so many different ways of people handling this. Like most often, like, oh yeah, it's like a sick sibling or brother or whatever, right? And you need to like earn money for it. Like this is how like literally Moonlight Sculptor started, which is World Road, which is based off of. But also, you know, like, oh, it's aliens actually, or like something like this, right? Something to raise the stakes and kind of like tie everything back to the real world. And you don't. And somehow it still works.
Yeah. How? Yeah, I'm glad. sort of when I was starting it, I had the same thought. I was looking at it, and like you mentioned, I think Dodge Tank is one of the ones that does the like pay for a surgery angle. And then there's like, Ascend and Awaken, like which will like tie it to their finances, where like they're streamers or whatever. And then you've got your stuck in game. You've got like, if you die in the game, you die in real life. And I wanted to do something where it was like aggressively the opposite of that, where, you know, like there wasn't anything bad that could happen. That's like the point, which, you know, is going to kill, you know, people's interest in some cases, because, you know, if Ned decides he quits, then he logs out and he is wealthy. You know, so like it's sort of like the entire story like unfolds with the background of like not only is he going to be fine if things go wrong, but like he could conceivably be happy depending on who he is. But I just found it interesting to have someone, you know, aggressively like look away from that, you know, and just be like, yeah, I could do that, but like I'd rather just start a new life entirely and see how that goes.
I think actually that's. No, you go ahead.
I'm not even sure what I was going to say.
So I think that actually works because for better or for worse, Ned follows traditional plotting much more than other isekai heroes, right? It's very, very slow. So slow that it's almost like inconceivable. But this is basically a story about a man who no longer is satisfied with being alone, right? And people are saying like, oh, there's no stakes, but there is. If he logs out and he quits, he will no longer have Frank, he will no longer have Darling, and he will go back to his life, like without, probably even without house, right? Because like it's still a copy or whatever. And somehow having that main character, and it's not even ever like really like drawn out or like problematized, right? There's never a question. He wants these friends, even though he's a bit like flippant about it, and he would never admit it, at least not at the start. I think that's just like one of the best motivations there can be, right? Not wanting to be alone is a very good motivation, especially if you're writing books for nerds, right? Because many of us are often not very alone. So yeah.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree completely. Like that's sort of like when I was setting out to do it, like what I really wanted it to be was I wanted to have things that like we worry about in our daily lives, you know, like because like I worry about my friends, you know, like that sort of shit, like what's going on with their lives and like losing touch and whatever. And that's sort of how Frank came about. And like it takes a while to get there. But what I wanted it to eventually be was the tension to come from like the main character like being threatened with losing his friend, and so you have Frank as a droppable item who becomes his, I don't know if you'd say best friend, because it's kind of, you know, I don't know, it's a complicated relationship.
I think you can say that.
Yeah, like frenemies maybe. But yeah, that was ultimately like where I wanted to be, was to have people like this character and not want him to go away. And that's sort of where the tension comes from. And then there's all these other like stakes, like you've got all the world firsts, and you've got the prestige, and you've got the things people care about, and you've got like your sort of like sunk cost type stuff, like what you've built and what you're protecting and all of that. But I felt like that was a really interesting like core to kind of like play around with and just keep it character focused. But yeah, the respawn angle for stakes is definitely something you have to think about all the time, basically. And it's especially tricky with like NPCs. Like I still really struggle with that, because like if they can't respawn, it's like you go back and you look at it and you're like, does it ever make sense to bring this person you care about who is not immortal, unlike everyone else, into a dangerous situation? Like, really? So yeah, it's a bit weird when it comes to stuff like that, for sure.
But yeah, like that's another thing, right? You like kind of gloss over, but the whole like idea of, well, is this really a person? Is this not really a person? And it's like Ned it's just kind of the kind of guy who's like, yeah, of course Lars is a person. What are we talking about, right? By the way, is Lars named after Lars Machmuller?
No, I just kind of, for some reason, I just latched on with that name. I had no idea why.
Yeah, no, because like I was thinking about like Wall of Chains for a second there, but and he said that he had been snuck into a couple of books, so I thought, but yeah, I mean, in the end, having Frank as kind of like this almost childlike character, right? Who's like very two-dimensional. Like he's an asshole kid, but he's also adorable at times, right? Like his obsession with cats, for example, and his vulnerabilities. And it's actually pretty good. All right. I'm also gushing now. What's one book that you love and why is it awesome?
Ooh, in lit RPG or just in general?
In general. You can talk about anything, lit RPG, non-lit RPG.
I'll say like in lit RPG, like my like earliest, one of the earliest books I read was Ascend. And I remember like really clearly, like in that first book, he like falls into a cave and there's like a skeleton or something, and he's using a sword to kill it. He's like, I got to switch to a blunt weapon so that it'll work on the skeleton. And for some reason, like that detail just like jammed in my head. And I was like, at that moment, I was like, oh shit, like this person's like really played games. You know, because that's something you just like see over and over, is, you know, skeletons are resistant to slashing and like that sort of thing. And that was kind of one of the things that just made me thinking like, oh man, I really want to write something like this. If we're just talking like general books, Christopher Moore is one of my favorites. A Dirty Job is probably one of the books that like got me really, really interested in writing. It's like a comedy about someone who ends up becoming the Grim Reaper. Just super good, super funny. If we're like older books, A Confederacy of Dunces was like one of my, probably the funniest book I've ever read. Just absolutely fantastic. Like it's like what we talked about earlier with the perspectives and all that, and like how different people are perceived by others, and like how much humor there is there. You know, where like you've got this like detective who thinks this guy is like a super sleuth like criminal, but the guy is just like a bumbling moron. And like everyone in his life just constantly overestimates him. And I think his name was like Ignatius, I think. Ignatius O'Reilly. But it's such a good book.
I can't stop like talking about Heretical Fishing because I'm still reading it. It's taking me forever because I don't have much time. But like that's also the trope in there, right? Where Fisher just kind of like comes along and it's like his usual Australian self. And then the mayor's like, oh my God, he's a genius. He's a tax collector. What's happening here? And like just when he thinks like, spoilers, by the way, just when he thinks, oh wait, maybe he's not a genius, then like something happens and he's like, oh no, it's even worse than I thought. He's like an uber genius. So yeah, I like that trope. And I've recently started watching Spy X Family, And it's also in there, right? Yeah, it's a really good show. Okay. I mean, that's a couple of books that you love and why they're awesome. But yeah, I got that. So I have another question that I kind of forgot, and that is, what's one thing that you learned while writing and would now do differently going back, or would do differently when you start a new series or when you write a new book?
I don't know. I want to say that I would really like plan out my system and like how it would grow and all that kind of stuff. But realistically, I think I figured things out by not doing that, which is like not really where you want to be. Yeah, for Lit RPG, I think I would have, I want to keep the crunchiness like in whatever I do next, like maybe a slightly lower amount, but I love that aspect of Lit RPG. But I think it's sort of prioritizing the sorts of things that are interesting enough to be tracked, to have like progression, like that sort of thing. And to sort of cut everything out of it that requires the sort of like tedious work. Like the first book tracks the exact XP amounts, and like I had like note cards and like everything, like it like maths out. And maybe I'm saying that now, maybe I made a mistake and no one's caught it yet, but like everything added up. And like I look back at that, and I'm like, it was really fun for the first like level or two, but then at a certain point, you know, you're gaining 8,500 experience, and it's like, do you really need to know that point value versus being at X percent? Right. So sort of learning to trim the fat ahead of time for that sort of thing would probably be the single biggest thing I would do, like starting over. But yeah, it's hard to say. Like there's definitely things like I regret. There's definitely things I feel like I could have done better. But I feel like with editing, especially in this genre where the turnaround time is so fast, that editing becomes less about like how good can I get this book and sort of calculation for like diminishing returns. You know, it's like you do your first editing pass and it's 70% better, and your next one gets it to 85, and the next one gets it to 90. And where do you cut that, you know, and turn it in? And I think I'm already, you know, so slow in editing for so long compared to so many people in the genre that it's like, man, it's tough to like justify those passes at the very end.
How do you feel about that?
About being like slower in general, or just like the speed of the genre?
I mean, basically, this is a very open question, right? But mostly it's about like, hey, like you are writing slow, and I think that's fine because whenever you do release a book, it's really good. Right. So I've had a lot of talks about this because I'm more on the quality side, where some other people are like, hey, look, my promise is like the next book is going to be better and not this one, which I understand. Like this is completely reasonable. Like people are ravenous for these books and the people like to read them, which is perfectly fine. But for me, it's I always kind of want to make the book a little bit better even. Right. But my drop-off point is what I'm saying, basically. It's like somewhere over here, like way over here, where for other people it's like somewhere here. So how do you feel about that fact that the entire genre is so fast and you're taking your time?
I mean, I'm very happy with where I currently am. Like, I feel really lucky. Like, I feel like I had a lot of like the early mover advantage, like especially on Audible. Cause like when book one came out, like, you know, there was only, I think Life Reset 6 came out like a few weeks around then. But like for the most part, it was like the only audiobook that was released for a week or two. So in some ways, because I got in so early there, I'm kind of grandfathered in where I can sort of afford, it hurts me to go slow, but I can afford to go slowly much more than someone who comes out today. I wish the genre weren't quite so fast. But I also see it as like, you know, people really love like waking up and they read their daily chapter and they read this and they move on. And, you know, it's a great service to be providing. It's sort of just like a different experience. But that sort of model, just like I just can't do it. Like I write pretty quickly. I do, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 words a day every day while drafting. But I end up with a lot of stuff that I just rip out and never gets published, or my first drafts are completely illegible. Like it's just it doesn't make any sense. But I actually stopped sending him to Brooke. Like he doesn't even see it until it gets like a second or a third pass, because inevitably what happens is he reads it and he's like, this doesn't make any sense. Like these chapters are like missing, you know, you're going off on random tangents, and he's correct. But it still feels bad to get like negative feedback on like, hey, this is bad. I'm like, yeah, I know it's bad. Like, so I don't know. Part of me just feels like, yeah, like it's just like, I don't know, like what early me was expecting. You know, I turn it in. I'm like, hey, this is a piece of shit. He's like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, that's rude. You know, like you can't say that. I can say that. Yeah, I think I just kind of made peace with it. Like, I'm not going to be at that like serial height, you know, cause I just don't have the velocity. I can't write like a first draft that's clean enough where I'm happy with it, especially in something with as many like intricate parts as like Ripple System does, and all the various like plot lines and characters and what have you.
It's very hard. I thought to myself, hey, you know what, Max, could be fun. You should write a book, and you should maybe, you know, like take the meta narrative and embed everything in the meta narrative and have like three different timelines and have like two different worlds interact with each other all the time. And then I finished the book and I was like, crap. Yeah. So yeah, maybe I'm in the same spot as you are, but I'm not grandfathered in. So maybe that's the issue. So yeah.
I mean, it's a huge difference. Like it's so much harder anymore. I really think that if I were to like just, you know, delete all of Ripple System, and if it were to somehow like come out today, like I don't think it would be nearly as successful as it currently is. Like there's so much power, and I think it would do well. People would enjoy it, but it would not be like, you know, where it currently is, where, you know, the books are hitting the top 20 on Audible. Yeah, it's changed a bunch, and especially like with the serials coming over, like that was like a sea change. Ooh, that was lightning sort of moment. And not to mention like those writers are so fast and so consistent, but they also came over with like huge backlogs. So like not only are these books coming out fast, but you know, there are five completed manuscripts that are each 200,000 words long sitting there, and you know, now they're coming out every 3 months, and yeah, it's tough. It's a much more competitive genre than it was even a year ago, let alone 3.5 years ago.
I kind of worry about that. I wonder about that because like I think this is better if I say this from a personal perspective, because I really like properly polished books. I really like high quality books. And I have not seen a book that has been written in serialized format, not edited thoroughly, that gets to the same level, right? It's simply not, I don't think it's feasible. Like, I will not name any names, because I think people are well entitled to the success. And I think as long as people are reading it, it's a good book, period. But I sometimes wish that there would be more of a space for people to take their time and actually go out and like, hey, let's give this book a complete do-over and cut out all these like weird little points here. Because I think for the genre itself, it would be way better if we could also attract people who are interested in like this like more trad-ish quality. Also, I wouldn't get laughed at so much, maybe, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's true. I think there's like, at the end of the day, there's tension when it comes to a faster release schedule, and you know, Royal Road, you know, basically says that unless you're already huge, like you need to release consistently and you need to release a lot of content because of the way the filters work and all that. And it's sort of like when people talk about like, why aren't indie books as polished as trad books? It's sort of like the same kind of argument, you know, it's like, well, if you have to do 3,000 words a day, every single day, like that has to come from somewhere, you know, like if you give so-and-so writer 3 years to work on one book and you give another writer 1 year, like, you know, one of those two books is going to be more polished. And that's before you get into all of the different mechanics of trad and the editors, the agents and the proofers and the dev editors and that sort of like apparatus. So like, I think it's really cool. Like what Serial's offered. Like, I think the idea that you can just like live in a story for basically as long as you want is like amazing idea. It's like a game that just like doesn't end basically. But yeah, I worry a little bit for like the speed for like newer writers and like how you break in and like that sort of thing.
Because like
it's just sort of, it's kind of always been a thing even before Serials, just with the way Amazon and Audible work. You know, like the best thing you can do is just release more books quickly, because whenever you release one, you get like a mathematical push in the algorithm. So it's hard. Like there's definitely tension there.
It's also a bit hard because like even a year ago when I started, it was like you would go on Reddit and ask like, hey, you've got some recommendations, and you would get the same things basically, right? We'd be like, hey, yeah, The Perfect Run is really good, or Mother of Learning, Dungeon Crawler Carl, like all these really big names, and like except for the meme of like Heavy Red Cradle, and Dungeon Crawler Carl, which is like outstanding, like it's simply an outstanding book. The recommendations change every single day, right? There's so much stuff coming out, it's really easy to get lost in noise, and B, also I think to kind of get overwhelmed. And I've been talking about this with some of the authors that I really like and really admire, and many of them write serialized, right? But they say actually, we believe that higher quality is going to be the make it or break it point in this genre, because you will get lost in this like huge sea of fast fiction. And I think I kind of agree with them, but yeah, it's really impossible to tell the future. Yeah. So,
yeah, I think we will inevitably get there at a certain point, but I don't know when that point will be exactly. But there definitely is, it's a crazy amount of explosive growth. Like when I joined the Lit RPG Reddit, when I was first starting, it was, I think it was like 4,500 people, you know, and this was 4 years ago, something like that. You know, now it's 75,000, something like that.
66.
You know, so like,
yeah, it's PS. Yeah. Progression Fantasy is at 66. And I think Lit RPG is like at like, I don't know. Yeah, 75. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so like it's that growth is insane, right? And just the number of posts, the number of releases. So we will hit a point where like, you know, it has to be, you know, just sheer quality. But I think with, you know, so much of it being algorithmic, I think speed will always be a pretty big part of what we do.
Yeah.
As opposed to trad, where like, you know, it's just the market just works so differently.
Books for as someone trying to like get into trad, or like thinking about going into trad, it is completely different. I've reached out to some editors, and some of them like said like yes, and like we talked prices, and my god, it's expensive. Like my god. But especially for like
thousands of dollars for especially dev editing, it's insanely expensive. Especially if you want something who like has like a serious like track record and will really like go through and like knows the market. I mean, you drop 5-10 super easily. And then there's no guarantee. You have an agent, you go into submissions, and it's still a crapshoot. It's totally different world.
I really have to like think about it, because like I got the book lying around, but we're gonna talk about it in the bonus material after the podcast, the YouTube podcast ended. Okay, so speaking of which, I think we should talk about shout outs. Sure. Do you have any shout outs?
First Necromancer just came out a little ways ago from Portal Books, who is also my publisher, Coldfang 89. I don't know if you've read Cradle. It's this little story. Actually, I love Cradle, just for the record, but yeah. Trying to think. I haven't read very much like recently. Like, I feel like that's one of like the sad things about doing this full time is that now when I go to read something or listen, like it feels like work. Because like does something really cool or really interesting, instead of just being like, wow, that's so cool, I'm like, oh, maybe I should do something like that, or maybe this would fit here, and it just ends up like tying into work. So that's kind of sad. The third Dungeon of the Clouds just came out with another one. Golem Dungeon is another one that just came out. I think that's finishing a duology. I know Jonathan Smith has Ace just come out, which is like a Royal Road story about tennis. Sort of.
Oh,
like
yeah,
a,
that
I think it's like
read by Jeff Hayes. I have a friend who is a little bit author, up and coming. Watch out! He's big into tennis, and I was like, "This is your book, dude." And he's like, "I'm not gonna lie, but Tennis Lit RPG, narrated by Jeff Hayes, was not on my 2024 bingo card." So,
it is funny you think about like Jeff doing the voice of the system in DCC and raving about feet, all that, and it's like, it's so good. It's such like a level of like art at that point, like in that performance. I just like that like performance as a whole. Yeah. Like one of the things for book one that like made me laugh the hardest was like, it didn't even make any sense. It was like someone asked Carl like if he knew what was going on, and his response was like, "I have no idea what's going on." And so like on like if I read that in a book, like, you know, I read it, but like him voicing that just brought like so much like to that line that I don't know, I just like lost it like for no reason. It's just like how powerful, like good, like excellent voice act can be. You know, it's like you turn line to like it's amazing.
It's acting, right? The same way like movie acting changes a script into a movie. The transformation from a book to an audiobook is the same way, right? It's audiobooks are so much easier to consume because you have someone else doing the work for you, thinking about how this could be pronounced and so on and so forth. I really, really do believe that like narrators are one of the reasons why our genre is doing so well. Like the Jeff Hayes's, Travis's is I'm not gonna go out there and say like, oh, this is a bad book, but like the way Travis does Frank like just amplifies like something that's already turned to 11 to like 150, right?
Definitely. I feel like everything, like a good narrator can bring everything up like a solid tier, like no matter where it is.
Yeah.
Like DCC is already like an absolutely fucking incredible book, an incredible series.
Yeah.
But then you put like an incredible narrator on top and it's just, it kicks it up so much. It makes such a difference. Like, I even think like with Ripple System, like I'm like 85% audio at this point, right? Like I make a very small amount like on the ebook compared to what the audio does. And I think a lot of that is Travis, like not only like his draw, but like the start of the series is like a bit rough. It's like the sort of main character you don't like see a lot in our genre because he's pretty unlikable. He's like, you know, he's antisocial, he's unhappy, he's wealthy, he, you know, is like ignoring phone calls, he's alone on his birthday, like all that sort of stuff. But then with Travis
eating sushi,
voice, like, he is, yeah, I think a four person prior to himself, which I've done recently.
It was very relatable.
We mentioned, I always like it when I order to see how many pairs of chopsticks they give me. You know, it's like they give me like four and I'm just like by myself, like I think one of the reasons the audio is more successful is Travis makes Ned feel like a person, like immediately, like just by voicing it. And like on a certain level, like we have empathy for people, but when you're reading a book, like there's something like that's like disconnected there. Like it's harder to feel like he's a human without that narration kind of being put out there for you to like latch onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I recently saw this post on Facebook where someone said like, I love all the narrators they had in Dungeon Crawler Carl. Like all the 60 narrators they had in Dungeon Crawler Carl. Oh wait, that was just Jeff Hayes. Right? So mm-hmm. Yeah. It's some of the like yeah, the genre like owes a lot to the narrators.
I liked I like Travis's cameo too. I think it was book five yeah. in DCC.
Yeah.
And like I remember yeah. talking to him about it, and he was saying he was doing it. And I asked him like, "Was what did it feel like when they were like, hey, we've got like a role that's perfect for you? It's like a sexually frustrated crab, you know?" It's like. How does that conversation go? You know, I can't remember what the exact term was, but I found that so funny.
Oh god! And I can see Travis answering right with his like
yeah, little smirk. Like I can see him like doing a really good job too. You know, I mean, like at yeah. everything, but like this like yeah. weird like oddball character. Like, yeah, of course he's gonna nail it. Like, but yeah, I just thought that was like such a funny. I don't think it actually happened that way. It was like my headcanon.
I'm going to put this in the bonus of the question I'm going to ask next. So just leave everyone else on a cliffhanger. Any last words, Kyle?
No, not really. Oh, I guess I should mention that book five is out on the 4th. So
yeah.
A little over a week.
And
something like that.
This podcast will come out on the 2nd because I'm going to slot you in.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Very cool.
All right. So, yeah, this is a podcast I'm going to be editing tomorrow. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening and or watching. Please do leave a like, subscribe, follow, you know, the whole YouTube shebang. We're all slaves to the algorithm, after all. It really helps me out a lot. Like, it really does. Like, you don't know how much it helps me out. Please do it. Otherwise, yeah, you can also, like, listen to me on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, whatever. Apple Books, and basically everywhere else where there's podcasts. So, yeah, thank you very much for swinging by and listening. Thank you again, Kyle, for coming. And if you want to hang around, you can, of course, join us in the bonus material or the second half of the podcast, if you want to be precise, up on Patreon. All right. Thank you very much. And I'll see you next time.